busy news week in college football means lots to talk about on the Penn State and Football Podcast. This is Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times Tribune, being joined, as always, by Sam Freeman of the Citizen's Voice. Penn State heading to Atlanta on December 30th in the Peach Bowl against Ole Miss. Pretty good matchup, number 10 Penn State against number 11 Ole Miss. First time ever in the Peach Bowl, Sam. I guess let's start first, with the bigger story here, because this has happened a couple times over the last, 8-9 years that the college football playoff has been, or the BCS or whatever, has been the law of the land here. Four-team playoff and five legitimate teams that have a great case for it and won championships. Five. Every conference champion had to say this year, and Florida State, undefeated, just dominates Louisville in the ACC championship game on Saturday, 16-6, dominated them defensively, but playing with a backup quarterback, they get left out. Sam, do you have a problem with this?
You see, this is tough. It's a little bit of a loaded question.
It's starting to sound like Franklin now, a loaded question. Go ahead.
I don't know. Do I think the committee has the four best teams in the playoff? Yes. At the same time, it's difficult to not feel for Florida State. You know, they win a Power Five conference undefeated. I feel like there's only so much you can do as a team. I think they have better wins than Michigan does. I'm not making the case that Michigan should be out of the playoff, but it's not like Florida State has played bums all year. You know, Jordan Travis being hurt certainly hampers their offense, but you look at the college football playoff committee's decisions, and I just think this decision sort of exposes a lot of a lack of consistency with them. Now, like I said, I think they have the right four teams quality wise in the playoff. That I don't think is very difficult. I mean, you saw how Florida State played. I don't think they would actually make any sort of run. I don't think they stand any chance against Michigan if they were to face off in the semifinal game. But at the same time, I always look for consistency with the committee, and I feel like we never see it. And this isn't some SEC bias argument or anything like that, but just simply, I don't believe for a second that the committee believes Alabama is better than Florida State, but Florida State is better than Georgia. They have Alabama 4, Florida State 5, Georgia 6. I don't see a scenario in which Florida State is a definitively worse team than Alabama, but somehow better than Georgia. I mean, I feel like if you're going to go all in on, Florida State is not a playoff caliber team, which I think is an accurate statement, regardless of how they played the season, because they lost Jordan Travis and because they haven't played incredibly well in his absence. To me, it feels like lying from the committee. I don't believe that they think that Georgia is worse than Florida State. I don't think Georgia believes that. I don't think Florida State believes that. I don't think the committee believes that either. And I don't know. I think that this is, frankly, the best advertisement for a 12-team playoff possible.
Yeah, and then until the 13th team starts complaining. I wrote that this week. Tell LSU, which finished 13th in these rankings, that the 12-team field figures all this out. I mean, LSU's playing its best ball right now. So I think there's always going to be a complaint. And look, I'm with you. I would think it was funny if the SEC didn't get in because nobody campaigns more than the SEC for anything. If they had their say, Ole Miss would be playing in this tournament. I mean, that's just how they feel. They feel they have the best teams in the country, that they play the best schedules, and that their teams could beat anybody. And I kind of see why they would say that. I mean, they are, if you ever watch professional wrestling, I don't know if you're a professional wrestling fan, but they're Ric Flair. You look at the guy and he doesn't look like much. He's looked like he's 70 years old for the last 40 years, but he's always wearing the championship belt. How does that happen? Well, he cheats to win. He takes a count out when he knows he's going to lose. He makes an excuse. That's his game. It's his gimmick. But it's really the SEC's too. I mean, essentially, in what's a play-in game, Georgia and Alabama. I think everybody thought that was going to be a play-in game, and Georgia loses. But then you got Kirby Smart out there at the end of the game saying, if you don't think we're one of the four best teams in the country, you don't know anything. I don't think they're one of the four best teams in the country. I don't. They lost to Alabama. I think Alabama's barely one of the four best teams in the country. And this happens to be a year where I'm not sure there's a dominant number one or number two. I really don't. I think it's that the parity is kind of there. And I agree with you. Somebody brought up to me that ranking Florida State ahead of Georgia was a sign that Georgia should have, or excuse me, that Florida State should have been in. Because if Florida State's better than Georgia in their mind, it's a 50-50 chance they're better than Alabama. Alabama only won that game by three, and I thought they dominated play in that game, really. So, yeah, I looked at that kind of as, number one, a cop-out, and number two, a sign that all they care about is 1 through 4. 5 through 12, it's just whatever. And here's another good example of how little they pay attention to 5 through 12. Give me a great explanation as to why Ole Miss is playing Penn State and not Oklahoma. Oklahoma beat Texas, which beat Alabama. Alabama drubbed Ole Miss. So on what planet do they think that a two-loss Oklahoma is inferior to a two-loss Ole Miss? And that affected the bowl matchups. Ole Miss shouldn't be in this game. Oklahoma should. And if you're going to rank Alabama and Texas in the top four teams in the country, then Oklahoma's resume is better. Oklahoma should probably be ranked ahead of Penn State. And that's just the way I feel about it, if you're going strictly on resumes. But at the same note, you said it. Do you think they have the four best teams? You think they do. I think they do. And at that point, didn't they do their job? Because that's really their only job. Their job is figure out which four teams are the best based on four criteria. And they only list four criteria in their bylaws. One of them is head-to-head. One of them is championships won. One of them is strength of schedule. And Alabama, on strength of schedule, beats Florida State. It just does. So I don't really know what the consternation about. I think the consternation is about ESPN. The perception is that ESPN did something to make sure Alabama got in. But this is one of those rare years. And they've put an undeserving SEC team in before, in my opinion. This is not one of those years. I think, how do you keep the SEC out of it? Like I said, they're Ric Flair. They got the championship. Isn't it an empty championship if you don't beat a decent SEC team, or at least beat somebody who beat them? I just think that, you know, if this would have been interesting, if Jordan Travis wasn't hurt, what does the committee do? And I'll tell you what they would have done. They'd have left Alabama out. And then you would have heard a whole different argument. All these people, the Paul Feinbaums arguing about the system now. Imagine if Alabama got left out. What they really wanted was Georgia in. These SEC guys, they really wanted Georgia in too. And there's no case for that. I would have flipped out if Georgia got in, but I'm not flipping out over Alabama. They won their league. So did Florida State. And I get that. I really do. But we've seen Cincinnati get in because they deserved it. And they've gotten destroyed by Georgia. We've seen Notre Dame a couple of times get in and get destroyed, but they deserved it. Last couple of years, they have not given it to teams that deserve it. And I think Penn State fans really believe that they deserved it in 16 and got shafted. So this is, it's interesting because the consistency part of it is not there, but it never says in the bylaws that they have to be consistent. They just have to do whatever they can to get the top four. And I think they probably did it this year, and they made it. There was a tough decision either way. Someone was getting left out, but I feel badly for Florida State. But do you think they're beating Georgia? Do you think they're winning their bowl game? I don't. I don't think they're winning the Orange Bowl. If they do, then we have a big problem. College football's got to answer for that. But I don't see it happening.
No, neither do I. There's nothing since the Travis injury that has indicated that they'll put up much of a fight against Georgia. But another thing that I think is interesting is we've talked about expansion all through this season. Florida State has been a team that's flirted with leaving the ACC. I feel like every year there's a rumor that Florida State is putting out feelers to the SEC or whoever. And, you know, if I'm Florida State, I'm expediting that process. Now, I know that the playoff is bumping up to 12 teams again, but if I'm Florida State, I'm looking at it. And to me, another aspect of this decision comes from, you know, a low evaluation on the ACC. you know, and to some extent, rightfully so. If I'm a top team in that conference, I'm not going to be anchored down by, you know, a conference that's not going to get me any respect. If I can go make more money in a different conference and have better results competitively, why wouldn't I entertain that?
Four teams and five conferences. They set this up this way on purpose. They could have set it up where the five teams get automatic entries and you into an 8-team tournament and you get a group of five team in for a 6-team. You have two at-larges. I think that would have been okay. And you're just extending the season by 1 week, which you're doing next year anyway. I think that would have been a much more fair way to distribute the spots in the tournament. But you knew going into this weekend, somebody was going to be left out. And if you're one of those five teams, and you know there's four spots, you better not have the most convenient excuse. And they did. And it's not through no fault of their own. Jordan Travis got hurt. And it was a clear and obvious he's not going to play again injury. He announced it after the game. He's done. So I don't know what Florida State expected here. They expect them to leave Alabama out and let them play. I just think that's stupid. Given the history of the tournament, the history of how the selection committee operates, the history of college football, the networks, the ratings. If you think they're leaving Alabama out to let you play because you went undefeated, it's mind-boggling to me. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's right, but it doesn't make much of a difference what I think. I'm not on the committee. My job is to tell you what I think is going to happen. And I told people on Saturday, this is what's going to happen. And people were up in arms about it. I thought I was an SEC homer. I'm not. I know what they're thinking. I know they want the SEC in there. And frankly, they deserve to be in there until someone beats them. They've won the last four championships. Until someone beats them, their champion has to be in. That's just the way I look at it. Now, maybe if Alabama goes out and gets wrecked against Michigan, we look at the SEC differently. But Sam, here, I no one's talked about this, and I want to bring it up to you. And this is going to be a real quick conversation because we've talked about this before. What if the 12-team tournament was in this year? You know, Penn State would be playing.
Yes, I do.
They'd be in Columbus. Is this a better tournament for Penn State? They have to play Ohio State again. You know, hey, it's not going to be easy. You get in. Congratulations. You made it. You made it as a 10. Now you got to play the 7 seed. Guess who it is? It's whoever's left of Ohio State. No, those guys wouldn't be in the transfer portal now. The entire offense wouldn't be in the transfer portal, but whatever. So anyway, we'll move on to the Peach Bowl because, you know, that's what we're really here to talk about is Penn State and their bowl matchup, the second straight New Year's Six berth for the Nittany Lions. And it's going to be against what I consider the Penn State of the SEC, Ole Miss. Ole Miss this year lost just two games. Ole Miss lost to the two best teams they played, got drubbed by Alabama, got drubbed by Georgia. Penn State lost to the two best teams it played, although not in drubbing fashion against Ohio State and Michigan. I think people feel, and I feel, Penn State could and should win this game. But when you look at the matchups, and I don't know if you've seen Ole Miss this year, when you look at it, this is a really good team. And this is going to be a stiff challenge for Penn State.
It's certainly not going to be a gimme game. It's not going to be the Cotton Bowl in 2019. You know, that being said, I think it's interesting. You bring up Ole Miss losing to Bama and Georgia in the drubbing fashion. That, to me, it really reminds me of Penn State. Like you said, it's not that Penn State got necessarily blown out by Michigan and Ohio State this year, but the two biggest teams on their schedule, you know, they really didn't compete for a majority of those games. Where I think it's funny is we have sort of the third best team in the SEC, the third best team in the Big Ten. They're almost very, very parallel images of each other in a way, where Ole Miss got dominated by its two best teams in the conference. It also picked up that win against LSU this year. I don't necessarily know what win Penn State has that mirrors that quality of opponent. But, you know, I think Penn State makes up for it in the fact it wasn't last year's Michigan game. I don't know. I think I'm with you where tentatively I'd pick Penn State to win. You know, ask me again closer to the bowl game when we see who's actually playing for Penn State. But I think you're right. I don't think by any stretch this is an easy game for Penn State. Ole Miss has shown an ability to score points, win games, and against quality teams. So I think it's a pretty good matchup for Penn State, just quality wise, and really as a benchmark for seeing if they're the real deal. Because we talked about it at the end of the regular season, Penn State has pretty much killed everybody it's played, other than the two big dogs in the Big Ten.
Ole Miss has, when you look at their roster, they have two big name skill position players. The quarterback is Jackson Dart. He could really run, but he could throw it too. He's a very good dual threat quarterback. And Penn State, I don't want to say struggled, because they've struggled in ways that teams struggle with dual threat quarterbacks. I mean, they get away sometimes and they get big yards. And I don't know that he's the best quarterback they've faced all year. I would say he's not, but he's pretty good. Quinshon Judkins was the, which James Franklin said that they recruited Quinshon Judkins, the running back, in out of high school, and I didn't know that, but he was the CBS named him the freshman of the year last year in the nation. But he didn't have as good a season this year as he did in 2022, so he'll be looking to finish strong. But I would expect you're going to see the Ole Miss team that played during the regular season. There's just not going to be many opt-outs. They don't have much right now in the transfer portal. We'll talk about that a little later in the show, but I think this is a good chance to face an SEC team that's going to be as close to full strength as you're ever going to see an SEC team be in a major bowl game going forward. I think it's a great challenge. But let's say this. Is this the kind of challenge that if Penn State overcomes it and wins, is going to move the needle very much with the fans? And I think that's really what bowl games are anymore. They're an excitement builder for fans. That's what the Rose Bowl was last year. You Penn State wins the Rose Bowl, and that's a big moment in any program's history. It really built a lot of excitement with the fan base because of how they won it, how they played on offense. And I think it put some expectations on 2023 that may or may not have been fair at the time. This is going to be a national stage, big tradition in the South, the Peach Bowl. But I'm not sure if they go out and win this game 35-21 like they did against Utah, that I don't know if it moves the needle that much. Maybe if it's Oklahoma, it would have, because it's a bigger name program, different kind of offense. On Sunday morning when I woke up, I thought there was a chance they would play Oklahoma. I really thought that was going to be the matchup in the Peach Bowl, is Oklahoma and Penn State, and I explained why earlier. But I thought there was a chance that if Ohio State was ranked ahead of Georgia, that they would have been in the Orange Bowl, and then Georgia would have gone to the Peach Bowl and played Penn State. And I love that matchup for Penn State, because even if you lose to Georgia, if you play well, it means something. It builds some momentum. Do you see this game, the result of this, mattering all that much? I just think that this is a very good SEC team, and it's danger territory for Penn State here, because it's a very good SEC team that could win, but it's not Alabama. It's not LSU. It's not Georgia. It's not Auburn. It's not a team that it has been a big national story over the last decade. It's just Ole Miss, and they're good, and they have a really good coach who's a character, and they have really good skill position players, but they don't get a whole lot of attention. And I think the teams that you want to face in a bowl game that really matter as far as getting into next year are those blue blood teams. And this isn't one of them. So I think it's dangerous for Penn State here, because they're going to face a good motivated team, conceivably at its best. They did not finish the season with, but they could lose this game too. And I don't know what that does to the fan base either. I think there's a lot of questions about, for me at least, about what this game is going to mean to fans.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll take the question as it was worded, which is, how much would this move the needle for Penn State fans? And I don't know. I think we've, now again, I'm there's a lot of different sects of the Penn State fan base, but you know, the vocal section of the fan base on social media, for example, I don't know that an Ole Miss win is going to move too many people. I kind of make the argument it should. I think that this is a pretty comparable matchup for Penn State to really gauge where the landscape of college football is at right now, where the SEC is, where the Big Ten is. You know, I think if Penn State really wants to assert itself as a, you know, hey, you know, we would be in the top discussions if it weren't for Ohio State and Michigan. If that's really the case they want to make, you know, you have to go out and beat Ole Miss. Sure, it makes sense if you would lose to a Georgia or an Alabama. They're arguably the two best programs in college football right now. You know, maybe not teams, but programs. It's difficult to argue with that. Where I think that people might be, you know, underwhelmed by a good performance against Ole Miss is, like you said, I hadn't even considered the idea of fan perception of a win against Oklahoma versus a win against Ole Miss. Because obviously, you know, if Penn State were to go out and beat Georgia, even if Georgia didn't field a full starting roster, you know, that's a huge win. And everybody comes away feeling like we just beat the back-to-back champion. I hadn't considered, I think you're right. If Penn State goes in there and beats Oklahoma, even with the starting quarterback in the transfer portal, I wonder if people are energized more just because Oklahoma has been a team that's dominated conversation nationally in a way that Ole Miss really hasn't. And that's not a knock on Ole Miss necessarily, because like I said, I think this is a matchup that should build energy, at least internally, you know, with a win. But I think you're right about Oklahoma. And on the other side, I do think there's a lot to lose as well. Because as I said, I think the case that you're trying to make by going into this game and winning it is we would be in the upper echelon of teams, even more so than we already are, if it wasn't for Ohio State and Michigan. And to do that, you have to beat these teams. If Penn State went in and played in Georgia, I think that there's at least the argument, and I'm never a big fan of these arguments because it's, you know, it's very fan-base centric. But, you know, you could make the case Georgia never wanted to be in the Peach Bowl. So was Georgia ever really going to give you their best shot? Ole Miss is. Ole Miss wants to be in this Peach Bowl. They want to make the same case Penn State wants to make. Should it move the needle? It depends on, I guess, your definition of moving the needle. I think this is a good benchmark, a good barometer for how good Penn State actually was this year. And that's something you can build off of.
That's why I love the Rose Bowl matchup last year. Because everybody, I think Utah might have been the favorite going into that game. And I thought Penn State would win. I really thought they were better than Utah. But, you know, Utah looked really good in the Pac-12 championship game. And we're going into that game with a lot of momentum. And I thought at that time, great matchup for them because that's a team that's going to want to play in that game. That's a way better result than they thought they were going to get going into the season. I always want to judge a team against how motivated is the opponent. And right or wrong, there's people out there who think that it's great that players could opt out of these games. I don't. I grew up with the bowl structure the old way. I used to love watching the bowl games. I thought it was always a lot of fun. You got to see every team. I always loved the bowl. And it's not the same anymore. It just doesn't mean what it used to mean unless it's one of those top four games. I think for now, the best you could hope for is as a motivated team, a good motivated team. And Penn State's got that right now. Penn State is going to have more opt-outs in this game. They already have a big one. It's a big deal. It's a big deal to face a team at full strength in this game, or any game at this point in the year. But what do you know about Oklahoma? Yeah, high-powered offense, Dylan Gabriel, blue blood program. Great. That's what people know, and it's about the team. It's about how they play. LSU. What do you know about LSU? They were the number 13 team, so they were right there knocking on the door. Heisman Trophy candidate at quarterback. Great offense, playing one of the toughest divisions in football. Great. That would have been a really attractive matchup. What do you know about Ole Miss? Yeah, they have Lane Kiffin. Nobody knows how good Jackson Dart and Quinshon Judkins are outside of the Deep South. It's just the way it is. And I think this is a really good team. I really think I will be impressed if Penn State goes in there and wins this game. Not saying that I don't think they will, but it will impress me if they can go in there and win. But I don't know if it will impress the general public. It's even worse. They go in ranked higher. So they're going to be expected to win. And if they don't, it might mean they just got beat by a better team. And it's not endemic of, you know, you can't beat Ohio State, you can't beat Michigan. Now you can't beat the fourth best team in the SEC. I was on a radio show last week and somebody, the host, really good guy, asked me, is there a team that if you were Penn State, you wouldn't want to play in a bowl game? And I said Missouri. And at the time, I would have said Ole Miss too. I would never want to play Missouri in a bowl game. They want to kick Ohio State's rear ends, and now they have a shot at it. This could be a really big holiday season for Missouri, but they're a very good team, and nobody knows who they are. And they're very well coached, good offense, really good wide receiver, but nobody knows Missouri. And they're a program that 8 out of 10 years are 500. that's a bad matchup in a bowl game if you're Penn State, because what you're trying to do in a bowl game is build some momentum for your brand. And you have to have that next year, because right now, like it or not, fair or not, the perception of your program, well-earned on the field and probably overplaying to the media, is that you can't beat good teams. Is this a good enough team that's going to convince anybody that's changing? Yes, it is a good enough team. But the second part of that is I'm not sure it convinces anybody that there's a change there. I don't see it. But, hey, it's going to be a great football game. There's no question about that in my mind. And in a venue where, you know, Atlanta, it'll be a fun experience, I think, getting down there and seeing this game and seeing what Ole Miss is all about and seeing what's left of Penn State. We'll talk more about this in the second segment, but they've lost Chop Robinson, declared for the NFL draft. Don't think anybody thought Chop was going to play the game. At a very deep position, that's still a big loss. And we'll talk more about that after the break, Sam. But do you expect a lot of opt-outs here? I'm on the fence right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I expect those who have a case of opting out to do so where I didn't last year. I mean, there were people who I think probably would have opted out who didn't because it was the Rose Bowl. I think those who are declaring for the draft are more likely to opt out than they were last year, is I guess how I'll answer that question.
That's interesting. I would think, yeah, and that's another thing that, you know, we've privately discussed, I mean, some of the other beat writers. You know, it depends on the game. You know, it depends on the opponent as well. I mean, are they going to, is Olu going to opt out if he's facing Ole Miss, but not if he's facing Georgia? Like, I don't know. I think it's a fascinating kind of, I would love to be sitting there with the players and their parents and the coaches when they discuss this, because I just want to see the process by which, you know, opting out and declaring for the draft is reached, especially opting out, because, you know, we've seen players opt out and then play the next year in college football. So it is, and we've seen guys who I thought would definitely opt out, like Saquon, end up playing the bowl game. We had an over under that year in the Fiesta Bowl on how many carries Saquon would have, and I had under 10, and he blew by it. He played the friggin' game, and I was surprised by that. And I think Penn State, for whatever reason, gets these guys to play. That's really why I'm 50-50 on how many opt outs there's really going to be. But Chop Robinson is out, declared for the draft, and we'll talk in a couple of moments here about that impact on Penn State and the Peach Bowl. Back at this. Chop Robinson, as we mentioned in the first segment, out of the Peach Bowl for Penn State. Not a surprise, but I don't know that this is a loss that, as deep as Penn State is at defensive end, that they're going to overcome so easily. They are a different team with him in the game. Look, they're going to start tonight, Dennis Sutton. And I think Adisa Isaac's got a decision to make here. I don't know which way he's going to lean, whether he's playing or not. He's a senior. He has a chance to go into the draft. I think he'd be a somewhat high pick. So he'll think about it. But, you know, they're loaded at defensive end with Dennis Sutton, with Zariah Fisher, with Amin Vanover. Jamil Lyons is a good player. How big a loss is this, Sam, for Penn State in this particular game? Because, look, those guys are going to come in and play well, but Chop is as dynamic as anybody off the edge as I've seen in a long while for Penn State. Do they overcome that easily? I mean, and look, he didn't play two games this year, and they weren't as explosive.
I'm certainly not going to write off that unit. I think that unit is deep. And you know, Manny, obviously, the way that he runs the defense with the rotation early and often, I think that Penn State is maybe better positioned than other programs to weather this absence, but it's certainly not going to be an easy one to overcome. Chop is, you know, in my view, easily the best defensive lineman on the team. And against a quality opponent like Ole Miss, you know, you're going to miss that. Let's say Adisa plays and, you know, everybody else on the defensive line plays other than Chop, you know, the attention that would be required to neutralize Chop is now being spread amongst the rest of the defensive line. It's a dangerous comparison to make, I suppose, but you know, when you watch Micah play for the Cowboys, I mean, opposing offensive lines might double team him, and it opens up opportunities for other defenders to come in and rush the quarterback. I'm not saying Chop is getting doubled on every play or anything like that, but as an offense, you have to know where Chop Robinson is on the field. And I don't think it's going to be an easy absence to overcome, but I feel like I would be sitting here without having learned anything if I were to say that Penn State's defensive line has zero chance of overcoming Chop's absence. They're a deep unit, and they've shown that they're a productive unit even without Chop. But like you said, it's not the same, and I don't think anybody should expect it to be.
Yeah, something you said that I 100% agree with, and I think it's kind of a controversial statement if you look at the numbers, because if you look at Adisa Isaac's numbers, they're great. Almost twice as many sacks as Chop Robinson did. He had more tackles for loss. He had a better statistical year, but Chop is by far the best defensive end that Penn State has. I would say he's their best defensive player. And I don't know if it's particularly close, even on a great defense where you have Kalen King, maybe a first round pick, where Isaac, maybe a top 3 round pick. Winston and Jalen Reed, I think, are NFL players. I think Johnny Dixon's an NFL player. Abdul Carter's going to be a first round pick. We can go on and on and on. Position by Dennis Sutton might be a first round pick eventually. So I don't think they're, I don't want to make it sound like I meant to say that they had no chance. Any team would sign up for Adisa Isaac potentially and deny Dennis Sutton as their starter. Anybody would want that. I mean, Ole Miss would love to have that. I look at it as it's, if you had seen this defense without Chop makes his defense kind of work with Manny Diaz and what he likes to do. Chop was a perfect Manny Diaz player. Fast twitch off the edge. You can't single block him. He's harassing you. He could line up everywhere. If you saw against Iowa, he's lining up over the center and just bull rushing play after play after play. Destroyed Iowa that day. Chop has been used in so many different ways. And the reason that Adisa Isaac's numbers, even as good as he is, I think he's a tremendous, tremendous player. But even as good as he is, his numbers are what they are because Chop is on the other side and he's commanding so much attention. I just think that if you ask the opposing quarterbacks who's more dangerous, they would say Chop. Now, brings me to an interesting question here. And you haven't been around as long as I have. And I'm certainly not going to rank Walker Lee Ashley and you know, players that played in the 70s and most of the 80s and early 90s, because I don't have that knowledge base to me. I didn't see those guys play every down, every week, like a lot of Penn State fans did. I could tell you the Notre Dame guys, but you don't want to hear that. So we'll stick to what I know. Chop is around 2 years. Where do you rate him among defensive ends you've seen play at Penn State? He ranks very close to the top for me, if not at the top. I think he was that good. I think he's that big a difference maker. And if I'm doing the all-time Penn State team that I've seen, Chop's on it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as you said, I have not watched nearly as much Penn State football as you have. But in my limited scope, it's easily the best that I've seen. I mean, let's see. My first year of watching Penn State closely was 2019.
Oh, okay.
You know, when I was a freshman there. Obviously, I had watched Penn State before that and everything, but really, you know, diving into the nitty gritty of it was 2019, and easily since then. I mean, there's been good pass rushers before. An interesting question is how he stacks up against Micah Parsons' college career. Obviously, Micah in the NFL is killing it, but you know, missing that COVID year and everything like that sort of makes it a more interesting conversation than I thought coming into today. But in recent memory, I don't know that there's been a defensive end that's even really come close. And like I said, it doesn't mean those defensive ends in the past have been bad, but you know, Chop has been usually I feel like the defensive production comes from the linebackers, and the linebackers were obviously no slouches this year, but I really think Chop, like you said, is probably the best defensive player on the team.
Yeah, I don't want to compare him to Micah because I didn't play the same position to me. I mean, we can compare Micah and Abdul Carter, I guess.
Yeah.
But you really can't. You can't compare Micah to any. Micah's the best athlete I've ever seen. For me to take Saquon out of that spot for anybody was going to be very difficult. But I've done a lot of baseball. I've covered Aaron Judge. I've covered a lot of guys I know playing in Major League Baseball right now, and nobody is. I mean, it's Micah, and then maybe a mile of ocean, unless Saquon is in there somewhere. You know, it's those two guys and everybody else. But Micah was a freak. I would put Chop in there. He's in that discussion. I went to Penn State after the 94 season. So I started paying attention kind of in the 93 Citrus Bowl, because that's when I knew I was going to go to Penn State, was right around that time. But the 94 season, I paid attention to, then went to school there the next year. And so that's really where I remember watching the national championship game in 86, have no recollection of the 82 championship game, watched the championship game in 86 because my brother is a Miami fan. So anyway, I'm going mid 90s to now, and it's Chop, some combination of Chop, Courtney Brown, and Tom Bahaly, and that's really it for me. And I don't know if there's anybody else that could even be in the conversation with how, you know, Aaron Maben had a really good season in there, and I loved Aaron Maben. Carl Nassib had a really great year 1 year, but those two guys aren't the players that those three, that Courtney Brown and Tomba were. And I will say this, I think Courtney Brown is the most productive of them. Tomba was the most biggest spots. Tomba was there. He would, you know, everyone sees the 2005 game against Ohio State. He put a big hit in Troy Smith in that game. Tomba in big spots showed up. He was the Jeter of those guys. And I'm not saying this lightly. I think the most explosive of those three is Chop Robinson. I just think he's that good. Over the long term, you don't replace that. Sam, you have no response to that. Unbelievable.
I feel like I'm a little out of my depth just because I was looking back and you know, I knew that you were going to say Tom Bahaly and Courtney Brown as people up in that conversation, for example. But it's interesting. I mean, Penn State's really been it's always talked about as linebacker U. And really, you look back at the best players in the defensive history, and really that's where they're at, is the linebackers. I was a little bit surprised, you know, upon further reflection at how, you know, I don't want to say how few edge rushers there were, because it's not what I mean, but, you know, the list it's certainly not as long as the linebacker list.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it starts with Courtney Brown. So I do feel, like I said, I'm not going to go back and some of these guys that they had in the 80s and, you know, like I said, Walker Lee Ashley or guys like that, Dave Robinson in the 70s, you know, I think Dave Robinson was in the 60s or 70s. Please no, please. I was not even alive. I don't know. I think the history of these really dynamic ends that Penn State has had starts really in the 90s consistently anyway. And it starts with Courtney Brown, but maybe it's recency bias, and maybe I didn't know what I was looking at back then. Courtney Brown is a big guy who had a good first step and would just overpower tackles. He was a really, really great player. I mean, legitimate first overall draft pick, but he's not as explosive as Chop is. And I don't say that lightly. I just think Penn State fans should kind of appreciate how good Chop was. And he's a guy that kind of made this defense work a little bit over the last couple of years. So we'll move on to something, Sam, that I think is more of your time, the transfer portal. You know, we're seeing what's going on with Ohio State now. They've lost, you know, Kyle McCord's in the portal, Fleming's in the portal. They've got a lot of They have a guy named Jair Brown in the portal, which I think if that's Jair Brown, I think Penn State should go get him. But probably not the same Jair Brown. I'm sure he's listening up in San Francisco. But Penn State really hasn't gotten hit hard by the portal this week. We're out in Columbus, they're probably a little worried. They're wondering what the direction is. Penn State has right now floating in there that we know of. Now, there could be more that hasn't been reported, but usually this stuff gets fleshed out pretty quick. Right now, it's Christian Driver. It's Alex Paquetta, the backup punter. And it's Jace Tutty, who was the scout team kind of MVP this year. Are you surprised it's not more players right now? I'm not saying I thought Penn State would get hammered by the portal. And in any regard, I just don't think that's what this program is going to be. But I thought there'd be some other players in there, and at least considering it. And there could be. We might just be talking about this way too early. But there were definitely some players I heard. And we hear rumors when you're around. You know, people who know some things, and they tell you, and they say, oh, this guy, I hear this guy's going in. But none of these guys were guys that I heard were going in. And the guys I heard were going in aren't in. And when I say I heard going in, there's nobody that I heard, quote unquote, that was a big name guy. When you look at the three that have gone in, and they're not guys who contributed regularly, good sign for Penn State. I would say it is, but I'm kind of surprised. I thought there'd be more, and I wonder why a program like Ohio State, and there's others. Michigan State's lost three quarterbacks. There's been a lot of movement at some of the Iowa's been hit kind of hard. Why is Penn State not getting hit hard?
I think it's the answer is twofold. For starters, I knew we were going to talk about this, so I went back and looked at last year's transfer portal entrance, and I noticed now, of course, somebody might have pulled the numbers and will prove me wrong, but on a quick look, it seemed to me like Penn State had more people enter the transfer portal after the Rose Bowl as opposed to before. I don't think, as I said earlier, that the Peach Bowl is the same level of draw as the Rose Bowl. I could imagine a hypothetical scenario where, you're entering the portal, but you're not going to enter before the Rose Bowl, because how often do you get to, lace up the cleats and don the jersey for the Rose Bowl? So I wonder if more people will enter after the new year. But at the same time, I think it really speaks to, you brought up Ohio State, you bring up Michigan State, you bring up Iowa. I do think it speaks to the stability of the program that, that it wasn't ransacked on the opening day of the portal. Now, when I say that I think more people will enter after the bowl than have already, I don't think that means that team is just going to get, torpedoed. I think it's going to be same caliber names that have entered the portal already are the ones that are going to enter later as well. But I think it speaks to the stability. I really think you look at Ohio State, you look at Iowa, you look at Michigan State. Those three, and for different reasons, are sort of in they're undergoing a metamorphosis in some way. Ohio State, I think, looked themselves in the mirror this year and said, we are not where we want to be. The trend lines are not in a way that we want to be heading. I think that's why McCord entered the portal. Obviously, I have never interacted with McCord, so this is just an outsider's perspective. But, I think that's what's happening at Ohio State, is there's a little bit of a reckoning going on since they can't get over the Michigan hump as of late. Michigan State obviously had its own fair share of turmoil this year. And so to me, that one feels expected. It's just going to be a total reset of that program. And then Iowa, I don't know what else to say. I mean, they were good, but they weren't that good. They're losing their offensive coordinator. I mean, it's probably a good thing, but it's still, that's, what Iowa needs is to rethink their identity. And so I wonder if that's sort of happening right now too. Penn State, I don't think, has any of those questions. I mean, it certainly has its own questions, but it's not program altering questions in my view. I mean, you have Ohio State and Michigan looming above them, but if you're a player that wants to make the NFL and you're on the defense and you're getting rotated in frequently, you know, you're not starting, but you're rotating, you're seeing the field, or you're an offensive player who's either starting or is, you know, in line in the next year or two to eventually start, there's not really a reason to leave. Penn State's not a team that takes itself up very often. Like I said, Michigan and Ohio State loom large, but there are worse places to make your name known. And I don't think James is really into taking things up at a crazy level or anything.
Here's my view on what this is. And I think Franklin deserves credit for it. I really do, because, you know, they not only have kids playing the bowl games more frequently than, and it's, you can only do this if you're a deep team. You can only play the way they do and sell it the way they do if you're deep enough to do it. So what I would imagine here, let's say for the sake of just the debate, that Adisa Isaac is going to play in the bowl game. So Adisa Isaac is obviously not going to play every snap of the bowl game, because that would be irresponsible. You know, you're taking the guy's career into your hands. So he's going to be on a play count. I mean, but you have to be deep enough to overcome that. So you look at Singleton and Allen. I think it would be foolish for either of those two guys to jump in the portal. And I don't think they will. That's not something I've heard, or even, but I'm just using it as a discussion. You know, yeah. If Catron Allen wants 30 carries a game, is he going to be able to find it somewhere? Yeah, sure. He's going to be able to find that. He'd probably be able to find some NIL money, but I don't think that's the right thing for him, for where he wants to go. So I think you're right at that point, where it's a really a good place to be if you want to develop yourself into an NFL caliber player, because you're not going to go to the NFL all beat up. I mean, Chop Robinson played 2 years. It looked like he was fresher at the end of this season than he was at any point in his career. I mean, he was as explosive as anybody, and he's going to go to the NFL on the highest of highs. And I think Isaac will, and Olu will, and a lot of those other guys, who Kalen King, probably healthy, no concerns in that area. And I think you're doing yourself a service by not being out there every down in the Big Ten, just beating your brains in. So I think Penn State affords that ability. And look, I mean, where you see that type of guy at every other program who's jumping in the portal to get more playing time, you don't see it at Penn State. The explanation has been sufficient from the coaching staff. Look, it's for your own good. It's for the team's good. It's for everybody's good. We want fresh guys out there, everybody getting a chance to play. And that it is what it is. You protect the rules protect the quarterbacks anyway, so Drew could stay in there and play every snap and whatever. So yeah, I think that you're right. Whereas a guy like, I mean, and I'm going to just throw a name out there, and I'm going to come up with somebody, Khalil Dinkins. I don't think Khalil Dinkins is going to the portal, but Khalil Dinkins has probably played a fraction of the snaps at Penn State he would have anywhere else in the Big Ten outside of Ohio State and Michigan. And he's a pretty good tight end, but he's waited his turn. He's going to get his chance. He's a very, very good player, and it's going to work out for him. And I think for whatever reason, Penn State staff does a better job explaining this to kids in a day and age where advisors are always looking at the NIL dollar. The view on that is, if you're playing, you're involved in that. The more you play, the more money you're going to make. And I don't think it's affected the Penn State kids the way it has. And I think that's a credit to Franklin. And it's a very underrated aspect of his coaching style that I think when you look at him and say, oh, he can't beat Ohio State, he can't beat Michigan, but he keeps your kids. He keeps everybody invested. He gets you. And I'm not, the bowl game isn't what it used to be, but he keeps everybody playing and invested in the program, even when other teams aren't. So I think that it's a big thing for him that this has continued and been a trend, because it isn't like this anywhere else, really.
I think another thing Penn State does really well is, it just occurred to me when you were talking about, you know, Khalil Dinkins, for example. And again, I almost feel bad bringing up current players' names, because I'm not trying to cast doubt.
Khalil Dinkins is not going in the portal, guys. He's not. We're just using him as an example of a guy who could be in the portal.
Right.
And not that we're you not know, that we think he should have been in the portal.
It's dicey waters to yeah, it to really venture is. Into. You know, but it occurred to me when you brought him up. Penn State does something that I don't know that everywhere does, where if a guy deserves to play, he plays. Maybe not every snap, but you know, you look at two examples, one from Penn State and one elsewhere that come to mind that really I think explain the dichotomy is, you know, Oklahoma lost their starting quarterback. But there's been a lot of controversy this season, you know, within Oklahoma about whether Dylan Gabriel should have even been the starter this year because they've got Jackson Arnold sitting behind him. You know, he's sort of leaving because there's a guy waiting in the wings ready to take over. You know, I think back to last year with Penn State, probably the well, I guess Kevon left too, but he, you could even put him in that category as well. I was going to say the highest profile player that I can remember off the top of my head that left was Christian Veyer. And, you know, although Veyer had the seniority in that room, other than Sean, obviously, you know, Veyer was the second most tenured quarterback in that room. Drew beat him out. Drew was the QB2, and everybody knew this season Drew was going to start. It makes sense for a guy like Veyer to leave because in the current makeup of that room with Sean Clifford, Drew Aller, even Bo Pribula, Veyer wasn't going to play. And quarterback's one of those rare positions where obviously Veyer wasn't going to rotate in. But you look at, you know, running backs, receivers, cornerbacks, defensive linemen. If you deserve to see the field, you're going to see the field at Penn State. That's just the way they do it. And it's why I trust whenever a guy doesn't play that the coaching staff has a reason, especially in this day and age. You're not going to hold somebody out on accident. It's too risky to sit a guy because they'll just go leave and find somewhere that will play them unless you have a specific purpose and a reason and you've really pitched, you know, you've explained yourself well and you've articulated the reasons why. I think Penn State does that really well. I think a guy like Khalil Dinkins, like you said, could he be playing somewhere else more? Sure. But it's not that he doesn't play right. Those things scaffold out as his career will continue. And he sees, you know, I'm getting opportunities now because I'm a talented enough player to do so, but I'm not better than Theo Johnson currently. You know, why should I be digging into Theo? I'll learn from Theo. I'll learn from Tyler Warren. And then I'll step into their roles as I become that caliber of player.
And that's a very difficult thing for a coach to impress upon a kid, especially nowadays. I don't know how many sports you played growing up, but sports, especially at the youth level, rec leagues, whatever, are much different than when I played. Much. And to the point where there's mandatory playing time now. Every kid has to play pretty much, I don't want to say the same amount, but significant amounts. You have to figure out how every kid plays significantly, which, you know, I coach my son's little league team. My kids have played all sorts of different sports, whether I've coached them or not. So I've seen how coaches have had to do this. And it extends to the travel levels too. By the time they get to the varsity levels, it is culture shock for a lot of parents and kids because, you know, you don't have to play. You could be on the team, but you don't have to play. And that's where it gets difficult for varsity coaches and things like that. But kids are now used to, number one, playing. And number two, they're also used to sitting the bench. So it's different for a lot of kids. They start playing at a young age and they're learning, but they got to play because the rules say you got to play. So there's really no sitting behind the kid who does it better and you watch him and you learn. Now you're out there. And by the time you get to, if you're good enough to play on a travel league or whatever, AAU for basketball, whatever the sport is, if you're not playing, hey, pull them off that team, find another team that kid could play on. You pay the money to that team and you're playing. I've seen it happen. What's going on in college football now has been going on in youth sports for about a decade. You know, it's, if you're not playing one spot, you're going to another. Hey, it is a much different world than when we played or when I played. And I think it's tough for James Franklin because you do have to kind of convince a guy like Khalil Dinkins. And I, again, hate to keep bringing him up, but Khalil Dinkins would maybe be the best player on Akron's team. He'd be the starting tight end at Pitt. He's a good player. He's a really, really good player. And what you're asking him to do at Penn State is be patient, and the reward will come. And I think, to James Franklin's credit, he wants patience. He gets it to a big degree from these kids. But you look at it, other kids, other schools, other programs, there's not that patience on either side from the kid or the coach. And, you know, when I saw Kyle McCord, that struck me when Kyle McCord entered the portal, because there's a kid who was a starting quarterback, five-star recruit, scholarship player, probably getting pretty good NIL money just to be there at Ohio State. Top prospect among them in his class. And finished 11-1, had a really good year, got criticism for maybe one or two throws in the Michigan game. But here he is in the portal. Now, I don't want to say that Kyle McCord went in the portal, because we don't know. Did he make the decision to go in the portal and look for something better? Did he get convinced to go into the portal and with Ryan Day or somebody at Ohio State looking for somebody better? Is there somebody they have in line? I don't know. We don't know what the situation is. But either way, it doesn't make any sense to me. Who's Ohio State getting that's noticeably better than somebody who's been in your program and has only played 1 year and is conceivably getting better and better, and his best football is ahead of him? Or did McCord go in there and give up the starting quarterback position at Ohio State and decide, I'm not competing for it next year. I don't want to have to compete for my job. It's not what the portal was meant to be here. What the portal was meant to be was Jace Tutty. Jace Tutty is not going to play at Penn State. He did everything he could on their developmental squad. He drew rave reviews. He played Sam linebacker. He played safety, played a little corner. He was all over the defense doing whatever was asked of him and doing it well, but he wasn't going to play there. So, hey, great. Maybe he can go somewhere and get a scholarship. Maybe all this positive momentum that he got from this season, with James Franklin talking about him, it seemed like every week, maybe he can go somewhere else and get a scholarship. Same with Christian Driver on a bad receiving core this year. He didn't play very much. So why wouldn't Christian Driver look to do something else, look to go somewhere where he's going to play? So if you're looking at the guys in the portal right now as we speak, they make sense. Other teams have players in the portal that don't make any sense. Like, why are you, what are you afraid of? Are you being told to leave? Because you shouldn't be told to leave. That's not what the portal's all about. Are you trying to go for more money? I'm not sure that's what the portal's all about either. The portal should be about opportunity to advance your playing career. To me, I guess that's the purpose behind it. But right now, and I said it last week, the combination of the portal and NIL are really doing a number on college football. We're going to get to a point in time in the next decade or so where free agency, you're going to have 10,000 kids in the portal. I'm pretty convinced, because everybody's going to be looking every year to better their current situation. And if your current situation is all you're looking at, then this is not a team sport anymore. I have an issue with it as somebody who grew up in a much different era of college sports. But yeah, I don't know. I think Penn State still to this moment is doing it the right way. It's to the point now, Sam, where I think it's kind of predictable when you watch the portal, say, oh, this guy's in from other schools. Penn State's kind of predictable in a sense, because you could look at and say, like, the kid who's the defensive tackle at Duke, graduated from Duke. Aeneas Peebles is his name. Graduated from Duke, had a really solid year last year, wants to play one more year, get his graduate degree. And I saw that guy's name in there, and I'm like, Penn State's offering that kid. And they did. Penn State's kind of predictable. Julian Fleming, I would think he's going to get at least a cursory thought from Penn State. There's a kid that very familiar with him from his days at Southern Columbia, know him well from Ohio State. I think Penn State and Ohio State were his final two teams on the recruiting trail. I would think they're going to consider him as a receiver. The Vanderbilt kids, there's two Vanderbilt receivers who are very good this year that are in the portal. I would think James Franklin's going to look at those two guys because he knows that program so well. When you're predictable as to which types of players are going to be in the portal and which types of players you're targeting, I think that's a real benefit. That's a real advantage. And that shows some stability within your program that we're not seeing it at certain other places.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that for a number of reasons, James has been able to cultivate a program that's very stable. And for whatever reason, they've done a great job of getting people to buy in. You know, I think really Penn State uses the transfer portal more for those guys like Arnold Ebiketie and Chop, you know, guys that, well, Maryland's still a Big Ten school, but, you know, smaller in
they're
comparison.
Still in the Big Ten. I just checked. They're still there, Sam.
But, you know, guys that are looking to, in the back half of their career, leverage the last few seasons that they have. And I think that's kind of a nice way to use the portal.
Yeah, and they better themselves in the portal in areas where good teams are good. Depth on the lines. Phil Troutwine does a really good job scouring the Ivy Leagues, gets these kids in. They're not going to ruin you academically. Obviously, they're going to be very good. That's why I thought the Duke kid, Derek Tangelo, came in a couple of years ago and was just the same player at Penn State as he was at Duke. And steady guy, leader type. I think they would look at this guy kind of the same way. Build your specialists out of the portal. I think that's a brilliant idea. Go get out. You could scout that easy. Go get an Alex Felkins, even if it's a walk-on type, Riley Thompson. I think that's the future of punting and kicking at Penn State, is the transfer portal. And the Biketa loss to the portal, I think, is a sign of that. But yeah, I think Franklin doesn't get a fair shake in a lot of ways. Now, the wins and losses, yeah, we'll sit here and debate them. They're indisputable in some ways, but the way he works the transfer portal, I think, is something that Penn State fans should be behind, because this is the way you want to use it. This is exactly what the portal was meant to be, and how you can make yourself a good team without relying on it, but also at the same time using it to your advantage and hitting areas where you need to be better. So, Sam, we're running out of time here. We've talked long enough this week. Thanks so much for your time, and we'll check in again next week. For Sam Freeman, this is Donnie Collins. Thanks so much to you guys for joining in, and like I said, we'll talk again next week.